Welcome everyone to Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today we're looking at a fascinating space. We're looking at conversational commerce and how it's impacting digital commerce, digital communication, digital marketing, and how consumers are interacting with this now very important and growing channel. We'll be talking about the US market, we'll be talking about Europe, and we'll be talking about how this plays out internationally. Today's guest is Michael Ricci, the Senior Vice President of Strategy at Cinch. Michael is a Senior Digital Marketing and Business Development Executive with over 30 years of international experience from technology operations companies ranging from SaaS startups to global industry leaders. Michael brings a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience specifically in conversational commerce, having developed some of the earliest mobile web solutions in the late 90s, all the way through to today, where he's working with major brands to implement conversational experiences for consumers on Facebook Messenger, on SMS, on WhatsApp, and so on. I know you're going to enjoy this conversation with Michael. Michael, so great to have you on here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Michael, I'm going to start with the first question we ask every guest. What was your first job or role that dealt with e-commerce or digital marketing?
Brian, I'm a little bit old. Having said that, I date back to
We call it mature, Michael. We call it seasoned or mature. I don't really subscribe to the word old anymore.
Well, I'm glad that I've got some company, my friend, but I date back to the early days of the whole digital explosion, if you will. I joined a player called Volantis, which was a UK-based entity, and their primary claim to fame was solving mobile rendering issues on devices way back in, say, the early 2000 timeframe, if you will. Back then, there was no ubiquitous standard for the mobile web, so net-net, what they were doing was helping carriers like AT&T and Vodafone and Orange and what have you solve super complex challenges with rendering the mobile web to devices back then.
So we're talking like Palm Pilots and flip phones and things like that?
Unfortunately, yeah, that's how old and archaic I am, right?
I had a Palm Pilot. I remember back in the day.
Oh, see, I knew we were going to get along today. But having said that, one of the other things that Volantis did was they were in the early stages of the SMS revolution. And back then, SMS was the only medium that brands had for marketing to consumers at the time. So one of our clients was eBay, and eBay had this notion that SMS could be a powerful way to extend their auction strategies to drive re-engagement, to spur more bids, if you will. And so I helped them shape that strategy. And as it turned out, it was a super powerful and super successful program. It incrementally drove tons more traffic to the web, tons more bidding, if you will. And then from that point, Brian, I helped them shape a mobile web strategy. And this dates back to the point where there weren't smartphones. There weren't such things as apps, if you will. It was all about SMS and the mobile web at the time. But net-net, we proved out the power of the SMS channel. They successfully extended into the mobile universe on the mobile web to begin with. And today, if you touch eBay, you're super familiar with the fact that they've got apps and they'll touch you in just about any channel that they can. But that's how long I've been around, my friend.
Well, turning to the topic at hand, which is obviously fast forwarding from your early experience with mobile and the mobile web, conversational commerce is an idea that has become, you know, much more a part of the vernacular of the industry. It's something that a lot of people are talking about, but I'm not sure that everyone has a clear definition, right, in their mind of what conversational commerce is. So I'd love to really start first with a definition, you know, how you would describe conversational commerce, and I guess why also you think it's such an important area for us to talk about in the commerce landscape.
Yeah, great question, Brian. So conversational commerce implies the existence of some kind of two-way chat experience. It could be simple SMS, where I'm powering up a two-way chat experience or SMS. It could be RCS. It could be WhatsApp, Facebook,
What's RCS?
Oh, I'm sorry. Great question. RCS is a Google Android technology. It's their future messaging platform, if you will. What they've done is they've extended the capability of SMS, and they've added imagery and emoticons and video and all kinds of things that weren't previously a part of simple SMS. But it's that kind of channel. It's web chat. It's things like Viber and KakaoTalk. Net, there's the presence of some kind of powerful two-way chat experience pitched to a next-generation web chatbot, capable of interacting with consumers in their modality of choice. And by modality, I'm implying voice, text, in-app chat, web chat, live chat, so on and so forth. And then more importantly, these more sophisticated bots are actually natural language understanding, natural language processing, meaning that they can understand that I want to speak Spanish or Portuguese or Dutch or French or German to it, and respond accordingly, if you will. So they understand the language, they understand the intent, if you will. And also, it's capable of literally engaging a consumer 24/7, 365. So that definitely, from a definition standpoint, that's a good way to frame up what it is. And then why is it important? It's super important. And that isn't just my opinion. Our friends at Facebook commissioned Boston Consulting Group to poll 50,000 consumers during the 2020 holiday shopping season. And they were anxious to understand whether they'd engaged with any kind of conversational commerce experience, and if so, what their experience was like and whether they favored it or what have you. The results are super, super interesting. They're available on Meta's site for listeners of the show. But net, by far and away, consumers market to market, and they polled consumers in the US, Europe, Brazil, India, Latin America, China, so on and so forth, overwhelmingly favored these kinds of experiences, said that they preferred them as opposed to static e-commerce experiences. And the reason that they did is they literally had the ability to have their own personal shopping concierge, if you will, get questions answered in real time, figure out whether things were available or not, and what's the closest store, and what accessories do people use with this. Anyway, just a better shopping experience. The other thing that was telling that came out of that research is when they asked these consumers whether they intend to look for and favor these experiences going forward, literally 3/4 of all of the consumers they polled, no matter the market, said that they're going to spend more on conversational commerce experiences going forward. So our friends at Meta know it's important. So too does BigCommerce and Shopify and many of the big e-com platforms. They're describing that as the future of all commerce in general. So this is where commerce is pivoting towards, both web-assisted e-com as well as any kind of mobile or social e-com experience, if that makes sense to you, Brian.
Absolutely makes sense. I think I'm a believer that there are going to be a large number of consumers who kind of like the self-service aspect of the web. And, you know, that was certainly true in the early days of e-commerce. I think that'll continue to be true. But there's also a lot of different use cases and scenarios, as well as consumers, and, you know, who are going to want this type of engagement and may find it actually a far more efficient experience as well, as enabling sort of recommendations or kind of validation. Maybe it's a considered purchase, or it's a product or a category that the consumer is not particularly like familiar with or hasn't had time to research. And so there's all different kinds of use cases you can imagine where this type of engagement, also there's sort of the convenience of it, opening up WhatsApp or text or what have you, and just, you know, being able to have these kinds of interactions, even if they're asynchronous, meaning takes a hour or two even to complete a dialogue, it becomes something that fits really nicely into the consumer's lifestyle and into their use cases. One thing that I'd love to just touch on, and maybe you have a point of view on here too, is I just think there's this then also blurs the line between sort of the research and shopping kind of component, and obviously the purchase process with service and post-purchase. It all starts to really blend together in the consumer's mind in a way that actually works really well for them, right? Because it's like now I have a channel where I feel like I'm directly connected to this business that I'm interacting with. And no matter what I'm trying to do, right, with them, I've kind of got this very much a go-to that feels like it's very personal. In some cases, it actually is. You might actually be interacting with a service agent depending on what you're trying to accomplish, or you may be interacting with a bot that doesn't feel bot-like, but rather is able to respond in a very human type way. And I'm just kind of interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, actually, it's really interesting that you raised that, Brian, because the first applications of conversational technology were in the customer care arena. Some of the biggest players there, Zendesk, Genesys, Intercom, began applying these technologies. And the reason's super simple. If you think about it today, the consumer, when they have problems or are seeking help or what have you, in many cases, they're taking to social platforms, be it Twitter, be it Facebook Messenger, and engaging a brand there. Why? Because literally they get more reactive responses. They don't have to wait on hold for 30, 40, 50 minutes to speak to a live agent who may or may not be able to answer their call. So in the customer care arena, a lot of these players started meeting their customers where they were and using these platforms, if you will, to have rich two-way dialogues and assist experience. For them, the upside was simple. If I can deflect live agent traffic, I drive down my costs, if you will. And so customer, what we call conversational care, was one of the first key use cases of these conversational technologies. It's now morphed into other arenas that we frame up as conversational commerce that we'll talk about today. Conversational marketing and advertising, I'll shed a little bit of light on that as we go forward. And then even in the banking world, they're talking about conversational banking. So net-net, this is a way of minimizing the frustration that goes along with calling anybody, calling live retail shops, calling a call center, and sitting on hold for 30, 40 minutes. That's a bad customer experience.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. Yeah, deflecting, but potentially even enhancing the customer experience as the AI and the rules kind of get built up over time on how to deal with all these different kinds of scenarios also improve. The experience has started to really, in a sense, potentially be better than interacting with a less than knowledgeable human being, right? That doesn't mean that there's not going to be scenarios or use cases where engaging with a contact center agent or a salesperson won't be necessary and may add a lot of value. But for a business, right, this is a way to cover a lot of volume, a lot of traffic through these kind of channels in a way that the consumer experience is quite good, and it reduces their cost and their overhead to serve. Yeah, for sure. So love to maybe just ask for some examples, things that, you know, our listeners may see out in the wild or could go experience, some examples you would point people to say, well, you know, here's a couple of things that you would bring to light for people to sort of see how real this has already become.
Yeah. So I got a number that I'll share with you, Brian. One of the more famous ones is Domino's created what's known as the Pizza Bot. The Pizza Bot, and Domino's is one of our clients, but the Pizza Bot is a Facebook Messenger property. I can go on to Facebook Messenger. I can search for Domino's. I will quickly discover their bot, or in Facebook Messenger on that Domino's site, I can post an emoticon of a slice of pizza. That triggers the bot. Once triggered, consumers can engage with the bot. They can scroll through carousels and order any of the menu pizzas, if you will, or literally they could create a custom pizza order. I want an extra large with garlic sauce and olive oil topping and whatever other toppings I want on it. Give it my address and either curbside pick it up or have it delivered to my house 30 minutes later. That's a good one. Another good one is Subway's created something similar, which is the Subway bot. The Subway bot is also a Facebook Messenger bot. I encourage people to go out and play with it. It's fascinating. Literally, it triggers an automated ordering experience, including frictionless commerce. They partnered with MasterPass or MasterCard on it so that I can not only order the sandwich, but then pay for it in one turnkey transaction. But I can not only order all the standard menu sandwiches, I can tell it what toppings I want. The bot tells me how many calories. It geolocalizes me because I've got to go pick up my sandwich. They don't deliver, as you know. So it's absolutely fascinating. But again, another great one to go and engage with. One other one is another one of our clients, and I believe Bloomreach's as well, which is H&M, a big retailer. They've created a bot that exists not only on Facebook, but WhatsApp and a number of other channels. They're continuing to scale out to other channels. But that, think of that as a personalized shopping experience. I can go engage with a bot, pose questions of it. What colors does this come in? Does it fit true to size? What's the closest store? So on and so forth. It assists my entire shopping experience. They started out on one channel, which was Facebook Messenger. It's been so successful that, like Domino's, they're now rolling it out to other channels because they want to meet their consumers where they're present. So those are three great examples of conversational commerce brought to life, especially here in North America. Elsewhere in the world, there's tons and tons of them, and I could talk for hours about those, but I encourage listeners to go out and at least engage those things, and they'll have a better idea how sophisticated these experiences have become.
Yeah, and get something to eat in the process. Well, you touched on this a little bit, but I'd love to just ask about the main platforms that are being used today for conversational commerce and anything you would also guide our listeners around, especially, you know, when you think about the differences between the United States and Europe, for example, where most of our listeners are from, you know, which platforms are the most mature to handle these kinds of things, or most prevalent, and where, you know, businesses are finding early success. So if you could kind of like click through some of the different platforms, what some of the differences are, and so on, that'd be really interesting.
You bet. Let's start at a high level, which is worldwide, there's 5 billion monthly active users of chat platforms, which is interesting in the sense that when you think about the big four of social networking, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, they're 20% less from a monthly active user standpoint, believe it or not. So this is where consumers have gone. When we think about that universe of 5 billion monthly active consumers, 3.3 billion of them exist on the meta properties of WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Instagram Messenger. So by far and away, those are some of the most popular and important channels, especially here in North America. Here in North America, we are very much a Facebook Messenger, Instagram Messenger marketplace. The third platform here is WhatsApp. But elsewhere in the world, Brazil, India, Latin America, Indonesia, South America, WhatsApp is the most powerful platform, and it's literally the predominant place where there exists engaging consumers. So those are the most important ones, but we have regional platforms. And by that, in China, I don't try and text message a consumer. They will not respond. They exist on a platform called WeChat. In Japan, it's Line. In Korea, it's KakaoTalk. In Russia, it's Telegram. So there are different chat platforms for different applicable countries. But again, the largest, the most important ones are those meta properties I mentioned earlier. And then lastly, what we're also seeing is sort of a renaissance of SMS. And by that, what I mean is there are many players in the space who have woken up to the fact that consumers want to have a chat experience, much like they do with their friends and family via SMS. And so rather than using SMS as a one-way channel, there's many providers, ourselves included, who are creating rich, powerful two-way experiences where we can mine data from the consumer. They'll tell us more about what they're looking for, you know, what they may be in market for, what their favorite or preferences are, if you will. We can feed this data back into a CDP or a marketing automation platform and use it for purposes of segmentation and targeting. And then more importantly, in real time, we can not only answer questions that they might have, but maybe guide them to our place of retail, or more importantly, allow them to transact on the fly. So all kinds of channels, and each of them differ by regions. Certainly happy to sit down with listeners and help them understand what might be important to their brand. But net-net, players like Cinch have made it super easy. We've integrated all these technologies into one ubiquitous API, meaning that for players like Bloomreach, they can reach the consumer wherever they happen to be present in whatever channel, if that makes sense to you.
Well, that in a sense kind of answers perhaps one aspect of the question, but beyond the size of the audience, is there anything that you would say, is there a significant difference between these different platforms in terms of what they can execute? Like your examples earlier talked a lot about Facebook Messenger, which may make sense just from the standpoint of the size of the audience engaging there. But is there also differences in terms of what these different platforms can enable in terms of conversational commerce, and what limitations may exist there?
Some of these platforms support product carouseling. Some of them support what I'll call radio buttons, or buttons that you can push and transact on. Some of them just continue to support simple text. So it varies platform to platform what they're capable of. But again, and I'm not trying to make a pitch for
us.
Yeah,
I understand.
But we've taken the complexity out of it. Like with the technology that we make available, we automatically detect the channel. We understand the channel capabilities. We transcode and optimize according to the channel. We make it simple for marketers and CX professionals to literally be successful in these channels. They don't have to sit down and think about, well, what's this channel support versus that? So from a technology standpoint, the technology is evolving super quickly, and we're making it absolutely easy for enterprise brands to be relevant in any channel that matters to their consumers.
Yeah, and for listeners who are Bloomreach customers, that's a big aspect of our partnership. You touched on the regional component here, and I think this is also really interesting, because I think here in the U.S., we have a certain bias that, you know, a lot of people in the e-commerce industry have kind of looked at this and said, I'm not so sure how important this is. And I think that's a bit of a hangover from earlier eras, if you will, different chapters of the e-commerce, industry and the evolution. But there's other markets where this is really important, and in a sense may become the most important channel. And it in a sense is connected to also some cultural differences between how the consumers expect to engage with businesses, like negotiating prices, for example, where, in the U.S. market, that would just seem really strange. You would do that for a high consideration purchase, but often you would do that over the phone or in person. But doing it through these kinds of channels would seem odd, especially for consumables or just a typical product that we may buy online. But markets like Latin America, Central America, South America, you mentioned Indonesia, and markets in Asia or Africa for that matter, where these are already, in a sense, the most important channels. Websites support these channels versus the other way around. I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on that.
You bet. No, you're spot on. So as we think about consumers in many of the markets you mentioned, Brazil, India, Indonesia, Central Latin America, they pivoted into these chat channels many years ago. And the reason's simple. First, in many of those markets, SMS is something that the consumer continues to pay to receive.
Yeah, it's expensive.
It's expensive. And so given that, you're less reticent to opt in or give a brand permission to start targeting with SMS. Secondly, these platforms are far more sophisticated. They've become very app-like. I'm capable of doing the product carouseling and app-like experiences that I talked about earlier. I'm capable of embedding video in these chat platforms, if you will, to really simplify my message and convey things that simple text isn't capable of doing. So they moved into them super aggressively, and they prefer these, what I'll call conversational or app experiences, in a big way. And then to your point, in many of those markets, they continue to be barter-oriented markets.
That's right.
And the consumer wants to haggle with somebody.
It's a part of the fun. Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah.
I grew up in Asia, so I know. When I was a kid growing up in Asia, there's this funny story my grandmother tells of us going into like a convenience store in like a small town in Washington State, and I wanted a candy bar, and I started negotiating with like the clerk, who looked at me like, "You're crazy. Get out of here, kid." Like, and I was like, "What? This is fun," because I was so used to doing it, you know, when I lived in Asia. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, I digress.
No, for sure, Brian, but it's fascinating. I mean, going back to that study that Meta commissioned with Boston Consulting Group, 33% of the respondents said that they liked conversational commerce because they were using it to negotiate prices or offers.
Yeah.
And if you live in the U.S., that's sort of a foreign notion. If you're in one of those other markets, it's perfectly natural. And so having said that, they're doing that. What they're doing in other markets, though, is in many cases, they're engaging bots and saying, is there a coupon for this? Or is there a special offer? Or when does this go on sale? These are the kinds of questions that consumers have in even non-barter economies. So again, it's just a decidedly better way to engage a consumer 24/7, 365, assist their shopping experience, hopefully make it frictionless and allow them to transact in real time. And that's exactly what Shopify, BigCommerce, Square, and others in the e-com space are focused on. If you can do that, if you can provide what I'll call a mobile concierge, you're going to drive more engagement, better conversion, and ultimately superior ROI. So that's why big retailers, big enterprise brands are leaning into this in a major way.
Yeah. And if you're an American business at scale, the reality is you're already serving consumers who are from those cultures in a significant number already. And so this is already a channel that consumer, just as an aside in a sense, right? If you're just even thinking about a segment of your consumers who may actually be used to this, expecting it, sort of like, again, connects to their culture that they were raised in. Aside from how quickly an American consumer raised in the American sort of mindset and culture looks at this, it's already a significant number of consumers if you're already at scale. So I just, you know, sort of an interesting thing to think about considering the diversity of the country. Pivoting a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of machine learning and AI and kind of the practical realities of that. You know, early chatbots were very much rules-based, which presented limitations, right? It had to be, in a sense, very prescriptively defined by a marketer, by a merchant, by a customer service person. It was very kind of rigid in some respects, the early ones. Now we've, of course, evolved to being able to leverage machine learning and AI to automate a lot of this, make it become more natural and perhaps less reliant on that sort of prescriptive rules-based approach. But what are some of the practical realities around where we are today? You know, when you talk about things like natural language processing and the ability to respond in a more natural way, how advanced are we today? What are the limits? And, you know, what can we be anticipating in the relatively near future, a few years out?
Yeah, to your point, not all bots are created equal. And what I mean by that is you describe what we call early generation web chatbots. Early generation web chatbots are literally replications of what I would call phone IVR experiences. Press one for this, two for that, three for that. Simple menu-oriented things, very limited range of questions that they can engage in and answer, if you will. Those kinds of experience frustrate consumers. And so it's fascinating as I work with brands today, by far and away, the biggest issue that comes up is, well, our consumers hated our bot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so now we're going to move it to...
Because your bot sucked. Oops, sorry.
Your bot sucked. Yeah. Just to state it plainly. But next generation bots have evolved considerably. If you think about those early generation bots, they were really intended to either work with voice or text, not both. Next generation bots, honestly, are designed to work with voice, with text, And that text could be simple SMS or it could be live chat on a website. And they've been fine-tuned to work with all these contemporary chat platforms like WhatsApp and WeChat and Viber and KakaoTalk and what have you. So they'll work wherever. The other thing that's been applied to bots that's really an important development is this whole notion of natural language understanding, natural language processing. In simple terms, what we mean is that the bot is capable of understanding the language that I would prefer to engage with it in. In Canada, for instance, a large swath of Canada continues to speak French, other parts English. Here in the United States, we're multilingual in the sense that we've got Spanish and English and all kinds of other languages, if you will, that fit in. But natural language understanding understands that I am now responding or preferring to engage in my language of choice and is capable of responding that way. Also, with AI, we can quickly determine the consumer's intent. We can parse through text, understand that they want to shop. They're looking for a certain particular item. We can understand their gender very quickly, if you will, and then respond accordingly. So these next generation bots, if you will, are using AI algorithms to not only understand intent, but in, as I mentioned earlier, mine data, understand my preference, what I'm looking for, feed that data back into my marketing automation platform, my customer data platform, my CRM, so that I understand more about these consumers. So bots have evolved considerably. And where we're looking at limitations, it's people trying to apply antiquated technology.
Yeah, it's really interesting how quickly natural language processing has evolved. And now we're becoming, as consumers, more trained in a sense to interact with technology using natural language, using our voices to just speak plainly, whether it's in our cars, in our kitchens, or what have you, to a piece of technology that's embedded in the vehicle or sitting on the counter. And certainly our phones are becoming no different. And there's a generational shift there as well. Clearly, younger consumers who are digitally native, you know, were born practically with an iPhone in their hand. We could argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but their expectations of how to search and navigate for information or engage are completely different. I don't think my daughters ever type anything into Google. They'd speak to Google, you know, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's also, I think, an interesting thing. Older consumers who didn't grow up with that, they maybe, you know, again, grew up in the American culture, used to a certain kind of technology paradigm, like it might not seem so natural to them, but that's quickly changing. And the younger consumers, this is a very natural expectation. And it's working because the technology has also evolved to be able to respond in a way that's also more natural. And so it becomes like just an extension of the human experience in a way.
Oh, for sure, Brian. I mean, think about what's happened with the evolution of the automobile. I mean, we've become a world of Siri, Alexa, Google Voice, if you will. It's now being applied to our autos. We jump in the auto. We pose natural voice interactions with our car, if you will. And I'm not talking about Tesla. I'm talking about most mainstream automobiles today. So the consumer is very accustomed to engaging things in a voice realm, if you will, and where they're not, in simple text, but net-net, they expect these kinds of powerful two-way experiences, especially from retail brands that they know and they trust.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So another kind of dimension that I think is kind of interesting to explore is around data privacy and consumer expectations, kind of around that. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that. I know it's a huge topic, obviously. In the world of digital marketing, you know, there's been some fundamental changes around, you know, data acquisition and targeting. And obviously for consumers, depending on which market they're in, they may have a very high degree of sensitivity or still a relatively low degree of sensitivity around sharing their own data and data privacy. But it's changed dramatically in the recent past, obviously, even in the US with Apple's changes and so forth. I'd love to get your thoughts on the intersection of conversational commerce and data privacy and customer data management.
For sure. I mean, it's a very real issue, especially when you think about the deprecation of cookies across browsers, if you will. It used to be that if I was a brand, I could plant cookies and understand more about your preference, your intent data, what websites you visited and all that stuff. But net-net, that's going away. And so as that goes away and as data privacy becomes more of a fixture in our everyday lives, whether that's CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act, whether it's the European Data Privacy Act, doesn't matter. It's literally placed a premium on brands to collect first-party data.
Or zero-party data, as we call it.
Exactly, exactly. And then if you think about that, though, it's super important, super relevant in mobile. And part of the reason there is that as we think about mobile, candidly, most mobile consumers, and we have data to back this up, will gladly disclose preference data, tell us more about themselves so that the brand can be more personal and relevant. And I'll give you a good example of that. Sephora created many years ago a consumer profiling experience where they asked me about my skin type and the type of cosmetics I use. Well, a female consumer anyway.
Oh, come on, Michael. It's fine. You can talk about the cosmetics you're using. It's fine.
But net-net, what they're trying to do, Brian, is understand more about me and then match my experience. And the same continues to hold true. This is arguably the most personal device we all pack around. And candidly, I would rather give preference data. I would rather the brand use first-party data, whether that's my transactional data, whether it's my loyalty data, if you will, whether it's even my simple intent data gathered from my website or app experiences with the brand. I'd rather have them use that and be relevant to me because, candidly, consumers have limited tolerance for applying what I call the email paradigm. Batch and blast, spray and pray style campaigns, consumers opt out of those in droves. They've tired of them. They expect a brand that they entrust with either the ability to contact them in SMS or any of these chat channels to be personal and as relevant as possible because they have limited time, limited bandwidth, and they really don't want to receive an offer for dresses when they're a man, if you will. You get it. So net-net, it's placed a big premium on brands to collect that zero-party or first-party data and use it to become more personal and relevant, if that makes sense.
I'm holding up my phone because it happens to be sitting next to my computer. And I think there's also a reality that just the form factor in and of itself requires that the engagement be more, in a sense, targeted and efficient and personalized because you are dealing with so much less real estate. And we're not going to go hunting and pecking and searching and deep diving to get an answer. We're not as likely to do that. Let me put it that way. Of course it happens, but we're less likely to want to do that on our phone where we're now used to this very intimate kind of app-like experience and so on. That's really what we're looking for. Whereas the web grew in a very different kind of way. And in a sense, from the consumer, it might even be subconscious. What their expectations are of those experiences is very different. So I completely agree with you. Like the fact that now the primary means of communication and engagement and research and discovery and all of those things is now happening through the phone. It just ups the ante. And that's true in things like, you know, the solutions we power around product discovery and all these different kinds of ways that plays out, but the experience I as a consumer are going to respond to is very different, let alone the fact that, yeah, we're all tired of batch and blast and generic, you know, marketing that's not relevant to me. I'm just not even going to open it. It's like the very few brands that do that for me, am I going to respond to? It's almost zero, right? Whereas if it's obviously post-purchase or it's very targeted to what I've told you I want already, even whether it's overt or not as overt, that's where I'm going to respond and engage. And that's true also inside the actual commerce experience. So it's just a paradigm shift that's very subtle on some levels, but very meaningful in others. And it's only going to get more so from here is the way I look at it.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I'll use one of the oldest channels and literally the workhorse of digital marketing, email. email is undergoing a renaissance, and that renaissance is these batch and blast programs don't work. I mean, consumers are tuning out, they're just not opening, not engaging, so on and so forth. So what we're seeing is a lot of big brands literally changing the way they approach email.
Oh yeah, we're right at the forefront of that, obviously. Yeah.
You guys absolutely are. I mean, you get it, using that data, marshaling it to personalize the email experience, to personalize offers, to personalize content, and that experience is game changing. That gets consumers to re-engage with your email, to actually open it, to drag it out of that Google inbox, and maybe even to do what? Click and convert.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. It doesn't just apply to mobile, super important, literally in digital ads, and important in email, important in website experience. But you guys get that, and you're assisting some of the world's greatest brands to evolve and move forward with these digital experiences. And when they do, they're seeing exceptional ROI and game-changing results, and they're becoming leaders in their respective marketplaces.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The we're going to jump forward 5 to 10 years from now and ask you to speculate. And predictions are really hard, especially when they're about the future. But I'd love to get your thoughts on where you think conversational commerce will sit amongst the channels and tactics for digital marketers and businesses who are transacting direct consumer. I'm not even going to say e-commerce, because I think digital is woven throughout in the future. But where do you see conversational commerce and technology fitting into that landscape 5 to 10 years from now?
Oh, Brian, I think it's honestly the future of all commerce in general. I agree with the big players in e-com. That's where things are going. But just to drive a stake in the ground, we're working with some of the biggest auto brands on the planet. We're working with Nissan. We're working with Lexus. We're working with General Motors, if you will. And interestingly enough, they believe conversational commerce is the future of the auto buying journey. Why? Because the consumer has now become digitally savvy. They're searching for, they're buying cars online, if you will. Think of conversational commerce as not only assisting that experience, but literally doing it 24/7, much like the guy on the lot, if you will, providing them a way, in a frictionless way, to schedule their test drive, schedule their service appointment, so on and so forth. So in the auto industry, it's being applied. Bank of America in banking has done some phenomenal things with their chatbot experience. They gave her a name. They call her Erica. Erica is capable of dispensing financial advice, transferring money for me, answering all kinds of questions I might have about banking or financial services products they offer. It's a new and better way to bank. And it's not just Bank of America. They're being matched by folks like Ally and PNC and Wells Fargo, who are also aggressively pivoting into this. So I see it not just as the future of all commerce, but it's being applied to all kinds of other industries as well. I'm super bullish about it. We talked about this earlier. Today's digital consumer, who are not just young millennials, but they're even older people like me, are used to dealing with Alexa and Siri and all these technologies. We expect it. And so why wouldn't we expect it in our commerce experience going forward? But net-net, super bullish about it.
Yeah, I am too. I think, you know, it's always hard to anticipate how fast these things will move. But I think it's very interesting. I also think the proliferation of digital channels and even these key interfaces, right, in a sense, calling Alexa or Siri, in a sense, an interface. But those also need to somehow get connected into this, because that's the interface that I'm now using often to ask questions, solve problems, and to make it seamless and easy for me to either transition or engage directly will also, I think, become more important, because that's, again, just how we're becoming accustomed to interacting through these channels. And then when I talk about other digital channels, we have to think about other topics and intersections like metaverse and so on, which are other channels, which again, often include voice now, that will also potentially become important. So it's not just these very standalone kind of marketing or communication channels, I should say, where this will be important, but it really will proliferate. And the back end, right, will need to be able to support those different interactions and, again, drive a contextual relevant experience for the customer as they transition from research, shopping, buying with confidence, you know, and then the transaction, the post-purchase and service and round tripping from there. Those are all going to like become important for this kind of capability to support across a lot of different kinds of environments is the way I look at it.
You're spot on, my friend, and it is across a lot of different kinds of environments.
So we're kind of running out of time, Michael, so I'm going to jump to the last question we have and we ask every guest. And, you know, in a sense, we already touched on what I think you may want to bring up, but you're open to talking about really any innovation, whether it's you as a consumer or as a technologist. You know, what the standard closing question is, what future digital commerce or digital marketing innovation are you most looking forward to? Or alternatively, what do you think is like overhyped and going to be an unmitigated disaster and you just wish we would stop talking about?
I'll focus on the first question. There's too many things that are overhyped, Brian. We could go on for hours. But the thing that I am most excited about is some of the next generation personalization engines hitched to the right customer data platform. There's a lot that's being done there today to marshal that rich first party data that a brand has and create personalized experiences across every channel that they touch the consumer. It's not only vital to mobile, but it's vital to email, digital ads, website experience, just about every digital touch point they have, if you will. So the thing as well that I'm excited about is we're starting to see CDPs literally begin to integrate channels and orchestration capabilities into their platforms to, in essence, replace the need for a marketing cloud by having a next generation CDP that can personalize and create better experiences regardless of channel that I touch the brand on. I think that's a natural evolution of CDPs and actually marketing clouds. And so going forward, those are the things that I'm super focused on. And I think are going to be personalization is super vital to mobile, but also every other digital touch point. And so when we think about that, those are the technologies that aren't hype. They're real. The brands that are leaning into them, again, are creating exceptional customer experience and driving game-changing results. So that's what I'm super bullish about, if it makes sense to you.
Yes, it absolutely does. And I'm also super bullish about it as well. You know, we would count ourselves amongst that crew who are really advancing the combination of customer data platform and personalization, especially with a focus on commerce, and then interacting and enabling, I should say, through an integration to platforms like Cinch to activate all these different channels and support these kind of customer journeys we've been talking about. We're absolutely all over that. And so, yes, we're equally bullish about where that's going. And really, we're already there. But it's obviously going to continue to improve rapidly from here as well.
For sure, my friend. But yeah, I applaud the work that you guys have done. I think that there's special genius to Bloomreach in the sense that you guys get it. You begin to marshal that data, create exceptional experiences that are better, that drive really good results. So having said that, we're super proud to be partnered with you, Brian.
Fantastic. Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time. Fascinating discussion. And, for those of you out there who are looking to get in touch with Michael, you can hit the podcast landing page, of course, and get links. And then that research that you mentioned, Michael, that Meta has on conversational commerce, let's get a link to that. And we'll put that up on the podcast landing page. So if you're listening and you're curious, obviously you can go hunting for it, but we'll try to make that easy for you. Hit the podcast landing page. So once again, Michael, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Great spending time with you.
And to those of you listening, be safe, be well, and here's to good business.